Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome Doug Wajin to the podcast. Welcome, Doug.
Thanks, James. It's great to be here.
Well, Doug, you are Vice President of Global Operations for UE Systems. You know, you've been with them for over 30 years, helping organizations with ultrasound, condition monitoring, getting these programs and technologies to work solving maintenance and reliability problems. Although very brief, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and UE Systems?
Absolutely. I started with UE Systems in the late 80s. UE Systems actually began in 1973. So I came in probably 15 years along the journey of the company. I went to Temple University, got out with a degree in marketing, and basically started looking for sales jobs. Ended up landing a job with an independent rep company that did sales of multiple different products, where I sort of got my first introduction to the big toolbox concept, I'll call it, where, you know, ultrasound isn't the only game in town. And then I did that very briefly and then went to work directly for UE Systems as a regional manager. And then held multiple roles inside of UE Systems, a regional manager, sales manager for the U.S., I was international sales manager and did some training development. And now I guess I'm in the role that I have taken now as VP of Global Operations.
All right. Excellent. So you've spent a tremendous amount of time with ultrasound, and that's what we're here to talk about, but more specifically, the remote monitoring piece of ultrasound. Now, what are the traditional ways of monitoring with ultrasound first? Is it, you know, we get the little device that gives us a little light indicator of where noise, how loud noise is, what direction it's coming from, or is it much more advanced than that now?
It started out more as a point and shoot type of a small pistol that you could essentially just listen for problems, and people used it for everything from compressed air leak detection to steam trap testing, to started to dabble into bearing testing, but it really wasn't, it was more of a troubleshooter. It really wasn't a diagnostic tool. It really wasn't something you could trend. So as reliability started to evolve and condition monitoring started to evolve, basically UE Systems started to develop instruments that were digital instruments that allowed us to go out and track and trend things over time and compare them to each other. And then the next evolution was really the ability to record sounds and actually do analysis to really dig into the nuts and bolts of figuring out the root cause of problems, you know, as they related to high frequency sound emissions from, in this case, rotating equipment.
All right, excellent. Now, what are some of the disadvantages with what we would consider that traditional approach, where we're going out with a device, we're having to touch a piece of equipment with it, you know, a point and shoot method for different types of issues we're trying to solve? What are some of the disadvantages of that?
The biggest disadvantage, I guess, is time. And I think that kind of applies to all these condition monitoring technologies. You know, as companies start to look at their maintenance programs, you know, a lot of it revolves around making sure that equipment is up and running. So there's a lot of wrench turning going on. There's a lot of repairs going on. You know, there's not always time to be proactive. So I really think that the biggest disadvantage to having to take a handheld piece of test equipment and go out and run a monthly route is the time it takes for people to do it. If we can cut down the time it takes, you know, it creates some really big advantages that. And the second disadvantage is, as companies over the last 20 years have become more focused on the safety aspects of, you know, their plant operations, a lot of the equipment we want to go test, and specifically things like motors, pumps, gearboxes, we find that they're covered, they have guards, they have shrouds, and it becomes increasingly difficult, even if you had the desire to send someone out to test with a handheld tool, becomes increasingly difficult to go do the testing because of the access issues. So that's really where, you know, that's the biggest disadvantage is these access issues and the time it takes to do it.
All right. Absolutely. And, you know, taking the time, depending on how big your routes are, how many data points, that can be, you know, an entire person full time just collecting the data, not even looking at it. And then you mentioned And then you mentioned the safety aspect to it. You know, how do we collect data if the machine's not running? So then how we overcome that in some instances? So definitely two major concerns there. Now,
absolutely.
Now, what technology is there available to us to help us monitor remotely with ultrasound? Is it just, you know, we put a remote sensor with a lead where we plug in it the regular collection device or data collection device, or is it completely remote monitoring where it streams data real time? What are our options here?
Well, I think, you know, we sort of view it that there's still a place for, you know, handheld monitoring technology. There's still a place for people to go out and run a route. And then there's the option of going full on, you know, with something like one of our forecast systems where it's 24/7 monitoring. There's no need for a person to ever go look at it. And then there's a blended program. So really where we've sort of found that most companies want to be is they want to take a lot of their critical assets. They want to take the assets that they're concerned and they have safety concerns about where people can't get to them or it's not convenient or it's very time consuming to take readings, and they put that on a permanent monitoring system. There's still a lot of assets that people can go get at with the handheld tools. So yeah, it's sort of a blended program. We've got both. We've got sensors that you can permanently mount on a motor, for example, run a cable out from, you know, inside where it's shrouded or guarded, and put that into a convenient, safe location for a person to go up and take multiple readings from, say, a switch box. Or there's the option to have those same sensors go into a box, and that box, whether it be through the Ethernet, whether it be wireless, the information, the data, the sound files are transmitted directly to a computer where someone could essentially see a dashboard on their desk or from a control room and make decisions based on what that's showing them.
All right, excellent. So we have multiple approaches here. We have the traditional where we're just going to put remote leads so we can collect to the data collection device, gather that data for each point on the route remotely, safely, or we have a full-time online continuous monitoring solution. How do the organizations decide which one to select? Is it based on the criticality? Is it based on convenience, cost? What is it?
It's a little bit of everything you just mentioned, to be honest, James. It's, you know, what we typically recommend is, you know, the first thing people need to do is understand what assets they have, understand how they fail, and then do like a failure mapping exercise where you map the failures to specific technologies. Ultrasound's not going to solve every problem. Vibration's not going to solve every problem. So you sort of want to figure out, you know, how do these things fail? How do they typically fail? And what's the best technology to apply to it? Once that's done, you really then need to do, you know, some asset criticality exercises and figure out, you know, what's the impact to the organization if this asset goes down, and what's the impact to safety if there's an issue with one of these assets. For things that would be critical for both, you know, operations and for safety, I think that's certainly something people would want to consider, you know, condition monitoring full time, you know, a 24/7 monitoring system that allows you to not miss a failure, you know, to be notified immediately, whether it's an email, a text, hey, this asset has started to enter a failure mode. Now, what do you want to do? And then be able to record, store, you know, keep all that data for future analysis. I think that's a good starting point, whether it's that kind of an asset or whether it's something that is not a high criticality. Certainly you want to apply technology to be able to identify failures earlier or earlier on the P to F curve and figure out, you know, can we avoid those failures in the future by doing things differently, by doing a laser alignment or by doing a, you know, a precision install. So yeah, the criticality analysis is a huge part of it.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, those more critical assets that we want to catch super, super early in that PDF curve, want to do some online monitoring with that, or those that have a very, very short PDF curve, you know, very high mm-hmm. speed spindle bearing that once it starts to display some evidence of a potential failure, that to when it fails is a short period of time, we're going to want online for that because it's not practical to do the traditional rope-based activities on some of those applications.
Yeah, you don't want the failure to happen in between, you know, your monthly checks. You need something looked at 100% of the time, because those decisions are going to be they're going to be needed to be made very, very quickly as to, do we shut this down? How do we do it?
Yep, absolutely. Now, what applications do you see best suited for remote monitoring with ultrasound? Is it bearings and motors? Is it fans? What are the typical ones you see organizations setting up with some sort of remote monitoring for ultrasound?
You hit it right there. It's bearings. Primarily, we're looking at motor bearings. We're looking at, you know, again, things that have access issues, air handlers up on the roof where it's just impossible to get to, but, you know, all types of rotating equipment that have, you know, rolling element bearings are where we're really going to shine. And the other area is on any slow speed equipment, you know, where the failure may happen gradually over time, but we still, you know, it's still a critical asset, like a conveyor bearing on an oven, where if it does fail and you weren't aware of it ahead of time, you've got a bunch of potato chips that burn up and you lose a batch of product.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, those rolling element bearings, those critical system with access or safety issues, those are where people are focusing. Now, we've talked about safety a few times. What are the main safety advantages to an online or remote monitoring system?
The biggest is that no one needs to go near that asset. You know, you basically are able to set the system up when the asset's not running, you know, go into a safe area, start up, whether it's a motor pump combination, motor fan combination, start that asset up and, you know, bring these sensors online, set baselines, do everything you need to do completely remotely without having to ever come in contact with the asset.
All right. So it's really all about, you know, removing that interaction between people and equipment where there's that potential for the safety risk, whether it's rotating elements, whether it's at a high location or a confined space or something of that nature, but we're trying to eliminate that human interaction with the safety risk that's presented based on the operating context of that asset.
Yes. And that applies to both the, you know, full-time 24/7 condition monitoring, but that same concept applies to even handheld data collection. If you can bring a sensor from a motor that's guarded or in a confined space or in a not accessible area, especially overhead things where someone would have to climb a ladder or get up on a high lift, if you can bring a sensor and a cable out and bring that into an area where there's a switch box where you can bring multiple points into, then that tech going out on a monthly route, he can do that from a safe, you know, accessible, you know, clean area where he doesn't have any issues, and the less interaction with the assets the better.
During these uncertain times, Iridicio is here to provide support. We have set up a special page for you to access exclusive resources such as webinars, templates, and office hours where you can ask our staff any questions that you may have. We are focusing these practical resources to help maintenance and reliability practitioners that are working from home or can carve out a little bit of time during this COVID crisis to pick a project and implement best practices. Find out more at help.iridicio.com. Now, where do people typically mount these sensors? Is it directly on the housing of the motor or the piece or the equipment it's within? Are they embedding them inside? Where are they mounting these things?
It's typically, you know, right on the actual housing. So, you know, if you look at a motor pump combination, you'd you'd follow the powertrain and you'd mount from the outboard of the motor all the way to the, you'd be outboard, then the inboard of the motor, then the outboard of the pump, then the inboard of the pump. So you'd mount it right on the outside of it. And they mount, the sensors mount pretty easy. You just, there's a little, what's called a click bond mounting system. It's a threaded piece that you epoxy onto the outside of the motor, and you thread the sensor onto it. And once it's mounted, it stays there.
All right. Excellent. So once we have these mounted within the system, so with the remote monitoring approach, these are going to a central area or an area of convenience for the data collector to connect to. With
Correct.
The online system, it's going to a data collection box that's networked in and feeding that data real time, correct?
Yes, that's correct. The one beauty of the permanent sensing and the 24/7 monitoring is the sensors are mounted on the motor and the pump, for example. Those sensors go back to a box. The box actually has memory inside of the box, and then that interfaces with either the Ethernet or wireless. But since the box has memory, it's not necessary to stream data. It sends across user defined how often you want to pull the data from it. But at the same time, since it's monitoring every second of every day, if any point triggers an alarm or exceeds an alarm, it instantly, because it's a smart system, it instantly knows point number two is exceeded alarm. I need to grab a sound file, I need to grab data, and I need to send that across right now. I'm not going to wait for the pre-programmed, timing of it, the frequency that they defined they wanted to see data. I'm going to send it now because this is an alarm.
Okay, so we're moving that computing to the edge. So almost edge computing, where we'll send back regular updates, but when it does hit this trigger event, we're going to start capturing all that data, transmitting that so the analyst can deep dive. But we're not transmitting data for the sake of transmitting data, only important stuff.
Exactly right. And the beauty of a box that has memory is that since it's constantly listening, it almost has a loop memory. So when it does hit an alarm, it's going to notify you by email, by text, hey, point number two is an alarm. But then you've also told it ahead of time. You've programmed into the software, when I hit alarm, maybe instead of pulling data once a day, I want to pull it once an hour. So it'll not only start acquiring data at a different rate, usually more often, it'll also go back in time and see what led up to the failure. So when you start talking about your root cause, that's where this 24/7 monitoring becomes very powerful. You can go back and see, did the point go into alarm in the course of 24 hours, or was it something that occurred over the course of a week? And it helps you pin down what caused the problem.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Now, there seems to be a lot of options here, a lot of potential for this remote monitoring. Where do organizations start to look when they want to implement this remote monitoring with ultrasound? Do they go to the route-based approach? Do they go to the online approach? Where do they start with all this stuff?
Many times, just to get started, people are starting with the route-based approach. And then very early on in, their analysis of how, the type of data they're getting and how often things are failing, they start to look at, at least trying on a few assets the 24/7 monitoring. Again, it goes back, they need to do a little prep work before they just deep dive right into any of the technologies, in my opinion. You really need to know, what kind of assets you have, how they fail, what technology is going to be the first to identify the failure, and then at the same time, what's the impact to the organization if that failure takes place. So they really need to do a little homework before they jump in. But once they've done that homework, it's usually pretty evident where you can, which assets you can do route-based condition monitoring on and which assets, you could do 24/7 monitoring.
All right. Excellent. So, start small, figure out where you got to go, then scale it up once you've proven it, once you understand what you want, how you want it to work, all those different things.
Exactly right.
Was there anything I didn't discuss around the remote monitor of lubrication that you wanted to hit on?
Well, one thing I will say is that, you know, there's so many different options ultrasonically now that we sort of focused on using either a handheld device and running a monthly route. And we jumped all the way to, hey, here's a 24/7 monitoring system that acquires data, it records sounds. There is one sort of in-between system that a lot of companies are applying to some of their assets, and that's simply looking at an alarm point. In other words, mounting a sensor that has like a 4 to 20 milliamp out, just setting an alarm and having that go into a control room, at which point it runs all the time. As soon as any point hits an alarm, you could send someone out to do the analysis, and whether they you send them out with ultrasound, you send them out with vibration, you know, maybe both on a rotating asset. So that's sort of an in-between option that's also happens to be a relatively low cost option.
All right, excellent. So that's just more of the, hey, there's an issue here, send someone to get some good data type thing.
Yep,
It's, you know, based
exactly
on
right.
upper limits and that's it. All right, excellent. Excellent. Yeah, I definitely think that's a good approach for, you know, some of those non super critical assets, you know, that the middle of the pack assets where, you know, we want to monitor, but we don't want to invest a tremendous amount of time. So it's a good way to kind of triage what we should be looking at.
That's a great term for it, James. Yeah, it's perfect to triage it and figure out what do I need to do next.
Now, what do you think makes the biggest difference in being successful with, you know, not only ultrasound, but the remote monitoring or continuous monitoring applications we see out there in PDM?
Well, the homework portion of it, in other words, you know, doing your criticality analysis, you know, making sure you're not monitoring for the sake of monitoring. You know, monitor the things that are going to have your lunch. Monitor the things that are critical from an operation standpoint and a safety standpoint. And then the other thing is take it slow. You know, get in, really look at which assets you have, work out, you know, your bugs ahead of time of what do we do when we get an alarm? You know, how do we address it? How soon do we want to know? And after it does alarm, you know, what action do we take and how fast do we need to take that action? And that to do that, you don't want to start with, you know, 300, you know, motor pump or motor gearbox combinations. You want to start with a couple and work out how you address failures. And then you can slowly expand the program. You know, jumping in all at once, I see a lot of companies do that. And it typically doesn't end well. They're better to start slow and learn as they go, you know, which data, which information they need and which they don't.
All right, excellent. So, you know, take the time, do your homework, start small. You know, all those things that we talk about with every sort of project is, you know, you got to think it out. You got to have that plan. You got to have that those milestones and prove it out before you go full scale.
Yep,
Now,
absolutely.
if you had a magic wand, what is the one thing you would change in a typical ultrasound program? What are people doing that they shouldn't be doing? What should they be doing better? You know, what is that major thing?
I think the biggest thing would be, you know, commit to a tremendous amount of training. If you don't understand what it's telling you, and that's one part of it, you're not going to have a successful program. The other thing is trust what it tells you. I mean, these technologies are great, but you need, you know, the information, you need the confidence to be able to make the call. You know, I see a lot of programs, somebody hears something or they find something and they're almost skeptical or hesitant to go report it up, so to speak. And you really that's they need the confidence to make the call, and for that confidence, they need the competence. They need that training.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how many times I've seen organizations buy an ultrasound device and hand it to their techs and tell them to go. And that's the extent of it. So the techs are, you know, trying to figure out how to turn it on. What does this mean? What does that mean? All these different things.
Well, and
That's
frustration sets in, and then they don't want to do anything.
absolutely. It's very, very difficult when we don't provide that level of training, not just how to collect data, but how to analyze it. What does it mean? All these different things. So is absolutely one of those critical things is that training component. Now, we've talked a lot about ultrasound and remote monitoring options we have. What is the one action you want our listeners to take away from the conversation today on ultrasound?
I would say if you're using it currently, evaluate, you know, the success of your program, not just based on how many failures you found, but go look at what the after failure actions were. Did a bearing fail and they just put a new bearing in without actually doing some root cause and finding out what caused it to fail? You don't want to get on what I sort of call the reliability treadmill. You don't want to just find problems and keep fixing them. You really need to dig in and find out what the root cause is. That's one thing. The other thing is do your research. I mean, there's so much information online now. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. If you're using ultrasound and you want your program to be better, you can go on our website, for example, or any number of places and see presentations of people who have been doing it for 10 years and have successful programs. Learn from them. If you're deciding whether to get started with it, again, see what other people have done. You don't need to reinvent the wheel.
All right. Excellent. I like that. You know, don't reinvent the wheel. A lot of organizations have learned the hard way, and you know, as a benefit, we get to not learn the hard way from a lot of these things. So access to resources as you guys provide on your website, you know, there's all kinds of other great resources out there as well. Now, Doug, where can people find out more about you? What events or activities are UE Systems attending or working on? You know, can people meet up with you guys?
We're very active on LinkedIn. We're also, our website has not only a ton of resource information, but we've got all the events listed there, especially the one I really highlight is what we call UE World. We've been doing that for 15 years. And we've really, you know, sort of created an ultrasound community, a users community. And we do a conference for several days down at in Clearwater Beach. It's called UE World. We have a ton of really good information down there, all presented by people in the field. And it ranges from people who have been very successful with their ultrasound programs, and they'll lay out in a presentation, you know, how they got started and how they got it to the next level, how they, you know, the people processes tools side of it, of, you know, how they got buy-in from the techs, how they designed their processes to make it easy for them to do, and you know what kind of results they got, and even the financial results. Most of them are very open to share how they put their programs together. And it's not limited. We recognize that ultrasound's not the only game in town, that you really need a reliability infrastructure for any technology to work. So we pepper those presentations with some solid, you know, reliability best practice presentations. Not to mention, it's a great place to meet a lot of like-minded people who are involved in maintenance and reliability and share stories and share best practices. So that's the biggest plug I'll say for UE World. That's in May.
All right. Excellent. In May. Definitely we'll put a link to that so people can access it, learn more about that show. I know I've had quite a few people that I know attend. They always have great things to say about it. Now, do you have any other resources you want to share with our listeners? I know you guys have a tremendous amount of information available for free on your website.
We do. And you know, the other resources I would say is we're huge supporters of the Society for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. We really believe in SMRP. We're involved. We've got multiple people inside of UE Systems who either hold board positions or who, you know, participate in committees. I think as a condition monitoring technology goes, we probably have the most CMRPs of anybody out there, certified maintenance and reliability professionals. And I'm really proud of our organization because I think that speaks to how committed everyone is, you know, not just to ultrasound, but to improving maintenance and reliability for our customers. So, you know, that's check out the SMRP website, get involved in the organization. It's going to pay you back huge, huge dividends.
All right, excellent. So some great resources. I'll make sure to put links to all those in the show notes so people can quickly access them, get to those resources for to help solve some of the problems they're encountering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now,
and
Doug,
if they're novice at it, if they're just getting into it, educate yourself. I mean, I can't stress how important it is if you want to, you know, inside of your organization, inside of an industry, you know, if you want to start to make yourself valuable and you want to be a leader, educate yourself. Some things that I like to do is I love reading books. I love like Ron Moore, Making Common Sense Common Practice, Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Some of these places that you can go just learn and apply it to what you're doing in your job are just tremendous.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, those two books that you mentioned are great. I've actually had Ron Moore on the podcast to talk about that book and some of the lessons learned from it. So definitely some other great resources out there. Not so much on the ultrasound side, but, you know, helping us be better at what we do as maintenance and reliability professionals.
Absolutely.
Well, Doug, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about ultrasound, remote monitoring, you know, the application, how does it work, all those great things. So thank you very much for taking the time today.
Thank you, James. It was a pleasure.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.